Immigration is another major policy issue that the Trump administration will continue to grapple with in 2020, particularly the flow of migrants at the U.S. southern border. According to data from the U.S. Customs and Border Protection, as of September 2019, nearly 1 million migrants had been taken into U.S. custody at the border, living largely in inhumane conditions. At least 7 children and 5 adult migrants have died in Customs and Border Protection custody since December 2018. Meanwhile, the U.S. government has also sent more than 56,000 people to Mexican border towns, where they face worse living conditions than they would in the U.S. while they wait for their asylum hearings in court. To help us break down the Trump administration's immigration policies as we head into 2020 is Nicole Nerea, immigration reporter for Vox. Nicole, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So according to the Trump administration, the number of migrants detained at the southern border has been decreasing month to month. Do we have a sense of why?
You're right about that. It's vastly declined from their height of about 130,000 migrants arriving at the border per month in May. And it appears that this is due to more than just typical seasonal fluctuations. And it suggests that Trump's policies on the border are actually having their intended effect. And some of those policies include the Remain in Mexico policy, under which Trump has been sending about, as you said, 56,000 Spanish-speaking non-Mexican migrants, mostly families, back to Mexico to wait for a decision in their asylum cases in the U.S. immigration courts. And there's also the metering policy, under which U.S. Customs and Border Protection has been limiting the number of asylum seekers that they allow into the U.S. at the ports of entry along the southern border. So those two policies taken together have really limited the number of migrants who are even allowed to cross over, and therefore limited the number of migrants that would have been apprehended.
And so basically, I mean, we've said this before on the show that the Trump administration's policy so far has been to deter, not just to deport, but actually deter people from wanting to come to the United States. To that end, is the U.S. government providing any assistance to the shelters or camps on the Mexican side of the border, since these migrants are technically in a U.S. government program and are being sent back by the United States?
So I think there hasn't been the same amount of attention on Remain in Mexico as there has been on some of Trump's other policies covering immigrants. And I think it's just sort of their facing the policy of it being on the other side of the border and not as easily visible. So the administration hasn't been held accountable to the same way that they have been on other policies. And they haven't been offering any kind of humanitarian aid to the migrants that have been returned to Mexico under Remain in Mexico or under a metering. The conditions for migrants in various Mexican border cities vary. In some cities like Tijuana, there are a number of migrant shelters operated by both the Mexican government and NGOs. But in the city of Matamoros, which is directly across the border from Brownsville, Texas, there aren't enough migrant shelters, which means that about 2,000 migrants have been forced to live in tents along the Rio Grande. And there are concerns about safety inside the encampments, as well as the spread of disease. The Mexican drug cartels have been kidnapping migrants. But all the while, the U.S. hasn't been stepping in to offer humanitarian aid. They've been primarily relying on the Mexican government and also some of the UN agencies to administer any kind of help.
Nicole, is the U.S. government or Department of Homeland Security tracking these folks as they are sent back to Mexico? Do they have documentation, some way of presenting their case at some point in the future?
Of the people who have been returned to Mexico under Remain in Mexico, they are waiting for their court hearings in the U.S. So they will be given a date to attend a court hearing. Of course, it's very difficult to be able to inform migrants of when they might be able to show up at the port because they are living in these very informal encampments. So there is a bit of a communication problem there, and migrants also aren't able to access attorneys for the most part, which makes it very difficult for them to stay in contact with U.S. authorities.
Nicole, we've been talking about the so-called Remain in Mexico program, and I'm wondering, what's the success rate so far, if you will? I mean, how are people granted asylum at the same rate if they're coming out of this program as they might be in other immigration courts?
So there's very limited data available on what the success rate is of people specifically in this program. And when I've asked CBP for numbers on that, they haven't been specific. But anecdotally, what I've been hearing from attorneys is that the success rates for attaining asylum in the U.S. after being entered into the Remain in Mexico policy remain very low. And that's because it's both difficult for migrants to obtain a lawyer while they're in Mexico, and Also, the Trump administration is assigning them to these temporary immigration courts that have been set up along tents along the border, where advocates say migrants aren't being afforded full due process. So those two factors together are really stymieing the chances of most migrants in obtaining asylum in the U.S. through this program.
Now, the Trump administration's deterrence policies, if you will, don't end in Mexico. We know that there's something called safe third country agreements between the U.S. and other Central American countries, notably Guatemala. Tell us what that program looks like right now. People are being asked to stay in Guatemala.
So the U.S. has these safe third country agreements with three countries right now, Guatemala, as you mentioned, as well as Honduras and El Salvador. The agreements allow the U.S. to return migrants to those countries if they passed through them on their way to the U.S. without first seeking asylum in those countries. However, only the agreement with Guatemala is effective right now. So these are migrants who are coming through Central America and arriving at the southern border, and the U.S. is then able to deport them back to any one of these three countries. But the Trump administration has sort of said from the beginning that the conditions in Guatemala are better than in Honduras and El Salvador. But advocates overwhelmingly say that all of these countries, and even Guatemala, is not ready to start accepting asylum seekers on such a large scale. And all of them are producing a significant number of the asylum seekers that continue to arrive at the southern border. So advocates are fearing that they would be sent back to a country where they would face persecution. But operationally so far, there have only been a couple of flights of asylum seekers who have been sent back to Guatemala. So this is like at most a few hundred people, but that could ramp up. And the Trump administration is also looking to implement its agreement with Honduras as early as this month. But the details of the implementation still need to be negotiated with the Honduran government. And there have been some sticking points in those negotiations that likely mean it will be delayed.
Of course, here in the United States, continental United States, I should say, there are other immigration issues playing out, most notably the decision that we're awaiting for the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, known as DACA. That's in front of the Supreme Court, right? What are we expecting on that front, Nicole?
Yes. So the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in the DACA case in October, and we're expecting a ruling to come down as early as this month. But it could happen anywhere up until the summer. The justices are expected to rule in favor of Trump and allow him to move forward with ending the program, which has offered deportation protection and work authorization to over 700,000 DACA recipients. And ending the program would basically put those people at risk for deportation. There would probably be a wind down period that would give Congress time to intervene in offering DACA recipients permanent legal protections if Trump were allowed to end it. But there's been lots of debate in Congress over the last 2 years over a compromise on DACA before, and nothing really came of it because the gridlock on immigration issues remains pretty tough to overcome. But if Congress fails to act and the Supreme Court issues a ruling that's favorable for Trump, it could make DACA a major issue in the 2020 election.
Nicole, the Trump administration also has a proposal that would raise the cost to access legal status in the United States. What are we talking about here in terms of who would be most affected by this increase? How much of an increase are we talking about?
So this would be an increase of about 83%, and it would affect about 9 million immigrants who are eligible to become U.S. citizens. The fees for a citizenship application would go up from about $640 to $1,170. And the fees also for legal permanent residency, a green card, would go up about 79% from over $1,000 to over $2,000. So that's a pretty significant price hike. And a large majority of the people who are eligible to become U.S. citizens are actually Mexicans. They're over 40% of the people who are in line. And that could be a pretty major voting block in 2020 if they were able to naturalize. But Mexicans often cite that cost is a major inhibiting factor in terms of naturalizing. So this would only create more barriers for that population.
And last but not least, the House also passed a bill last year regarding agricultural workers and their legal status. Where does that bill stand, and how likely is the Senate to pass that bill?
So it would offer 300,000 undocumented farm workers a path to citizenship. That's sort of the major provision of that bill. The House passed it in December, and it's significant because Republicans are generally opposed to any kind of legalization scheme. But it remains to be seen whether the Senate will pass the legislation. It seems the best bet for Republicans with agricultural constituents to reach a compromise and help the agricultural industry.
Well, important parts all around. Nicole Narea, immigration reporter for Vox, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.